This is the TTY Dialer, episode 26, for the week of April 24th through the 29th. Hello and welcome to another edition of WRVO's companion to our old-time radio show, Tuned to Yesterday. I'm Mark Livonier. In this podcast, I bring you fun with sound from radio's past, radio history, also a look at the shows coming up for the week on Tuned to Yesterday, where every night from 10 to midnight, we broadcast comedy, drama, science fiction, westerns, thrills, and much more from radio's golden years. If you're in the central and northern New York area, you can hear it live on WRVO or just stream it any night from 10 to midnight at WRVO.org.
Four notes that are alike and one that is outstanding. And of America's leading cigarettes, one is outstanding. The cigarette in the distinguished red package, Pall Mall.
Ladies and gentlemen, have you noticed how many of your friends have changed to Pall Mall? There's a reason. Pall Mall famous cigarettes.
Good to look at.
Good to feel.
Good to taste.
And good to smoke.
Yes, Pall Malls are good to look at, good to feel, good to taste, and good to smoke. For Pall Mall's greater length filters the smoke naturally through the much greater distance of Pall Mall's traditionally fine, mellow tobaccos, giving you a smoother, mellower, more satisfying smoke.
Four notes that are alike, and one that is outstanding. And of America's leading cigarettes, one is outstanding.
Pall Mall famous cigarettes. Outstanding.
And they are mild.
That was a commercial for a program called The Big Story, which was sponsored by Pall Mall from 1947 through 1954, where the show was supported in its last year or so by Lucky Strike cigarettes. And the program did very well in the ratings at that time, rivaling some of radio's greats even. And it just brought forth true crime stories, but with a twist. It would profile an actual reporter and the story that they wrote that eventually solved a crime and brought a criminal to justice, just through the tenacity of the writers at some of America's biggest news outlets. It was really fast-paced and exciting and followed the trail of the mystery at hand with a lot of drama. So much so, often the reporters who were profiled listened to the show with, of course, a sense of flattery, but because of the over-characterization of their personalities, also had to listen with a sense of humor. The Pall Mall name wasn't tacked onto too many radio shows of that time, but the owner of that line of cigarettes, the American Tobacco Company, was actually knee-deep in sponsorships on the air, maybe even waist-deep, with its Lucky Strike brand backing the no-doubt expensive and very popular Jack Benny show on Sunday nights. Now, spending exorbitant amounts on advertising was actually a part of that company's history, stretching back to the late 19th century, when they were producing cigarettes with a new invention, a rolling machine, that was resisted by other companies, and in an effort to push their brand, the owner spent $800,000 in 1889 on advertising alone. That's about $216 million today. And by doing so, he found more business and actually forced other cigarette makers to drastically cut their prices and in many cases join their network of brands, so to speak. Years later, the American Tobacco Company would sponsor over 30 radio shows from the early 1930s to the mid-1950s and certainly had the money to do so. And some of that money would go to the reporters featured on the Big Story program as well, as a way to further advertise, of course, but also to thank them for their work.
The makers of Pall Mall famous cigarettes are proud to have named you the winner of the Pall Mall $500 award for notable service in the field of journalism.
Coming up this Monday night on Tuned to Yesterday, it's an hour of mystery from episodes of Quiet Please and The Big Story.
And she saw his face clearly.
Give me that paper. The gunman was identified as James Horvath, notorious gangster from the Flats area of Cleveland.
No, it wasn't Mickey. She said it wasn't Mickey.
You go on home, Joan. I'll call you in the morning.
Well, what are you going to do?
A little investigating on my own. I'd like to check this report and find out why that girl was never called to testify.
At 11 o'clock Monday night, it's an hour of westerns with Gunsmoke and Dr. Six Gun. This Tuesday at 10, comedy with Joan Davis Time and the Bob Hope Show. Then it's true history with two interesting shows, Americans at Work, profiling an auctioneer from 1939, then that was the year profiling 1914. You can hear these shows this Monday and Tuesday from 10 to midnight on Tuned to Yesterday, on the air or online at WRVO.org. This Wednesday, April 26th, is the day that the radio team of Lum and Abner made their on-air debut in 1931 on local station KTHS in Hot Springs, Arkansas. They would end up leaving behind a legacy of homespun comedy that was revered by millions. In the first few months of the show, the two were heard on Sundays with musings and subtle humor before rapidly becoming a daily show. And the stars, Chester Locke and Norris Koff, had a mission to bring that sense of home and small-town sensibility in the fictional town of Pine Ridge, Arkansas, on the air, which was a hit with listeners across the country up until their last broadcast in 1954. It's said that they were in part inspired by Amos and Andy on the air, insofar as two men sitting across a microphone with a thick dialect and sharing humorous observations. As Chester Locke, who played Lum, said in a 1937 interview, "The simple philosophy of the Arkansas Hills, genuine and unadorned, is very interesting." Lum and Abner were on the air for over 20 years, and while there wasn't exactly a running storyline, much of the show centered around their business and the characters who visited at a place called the Jot 'em Down Store. By the time the show was heard nationally on NBC in the 1930s, the backdrop of a cluttered general store was really endearing to listeners, and was the reason for one of the very few sound effects heard on the show, and that was the squeaking of the store's door. As their career wound down in the early 1950s, it was in a way stunted with a network experiment to take them out of the simple 15 minutes they broadcast, with generally just the two of them, and throw them into a bombastic half-hour sitcom, and had a raucous live audience and other characters, and it really removed them from the two friends on the porch or at the general store, pondering life or trying to reason their way out of a problem or even a scheme. Here's some sound from one of their broadcasts from the early 1940s.
"And now, let's see what's going on down in Pine Ridge. Well, Lum's scheme to upset Frank Foster's date with Miss Frederick boomeranged and resulted in Frank's driving her to the county seat to the teachers' meeting today. Lum has spent a miserable day lamenting his phony leg fracture, his bad luck, and everything else he can think of. As we look in on the little community now, it is late afternoon. We find Abner in the Jot 'em Down store trying to get Lum out of his ill humor. Listen.
Well, if you don't quit sitting there fuming and fussing, you're going to work yourself right into a nervous breakdown, Lum.
Well, who wouldn't fume and fuss? Granny's a man can just stand so much of something, and that's all, Abner. Looks like everything I try to do works out right square backwards again me.
Oh, well, you ain't had nothing terrible bad happen to you.
What about my broke leg?
Your leg ain't broke. You just been making out like it was.
That's right, ain't it?
Of course it is.
Granny's, I've wore these splints and bandages on there so long now, I've got to where I believe it myself, even.
Well, you ought to be ashamed of yourself complaining so much, Lum.
What about Frank Foster taking Miss Fredericton to the teacher's meeting today? I guess that was good luck for me.
Well, that was your own fault. You got him to dismiss school so she could go in there.
Yeah, but when I got him to do that, I thought I was going to get to ride in there with her. This dad-blamed fake broke leg of mine's the cause of the whole thing. Hadn't have been for it, I could have started right out courting her the day she hit town, and Frank Foster never would have had a chance with her.
Yeah, it slowed you down all right.
Well, I've just put up with it just as long as I'm going to. Ain't but one thing to do, Abner. I've made up my mind. Come on over here and take these bandages off.
Take them off?
Yes, sir. Just start unwrapping them right now.
Lum, you can't do that.
Well, why can't I do it? It's my leg, ain't it?
Well, what about all these people around here that's been so nice to you because they thought your leg was broke?
Well, I'm just going to tell them the truth and have it over with.
What about that insurance company? What if they find out your leg ain't broke after you sending in a claim for an accident?
Well, I just won't take the money. I'll tell them Squire Skimp sent that claim in. Just tell them the truth about the whole thing. Fact is, I'd rather go to the penitentiary any day than to wear these bandages and splints any longer. Go ahead, start taking them off. I done made up my mind.
All right, that's what you want to do, but I think you're making a mistake.
Just undo that safety pin, man. That's where the bandage starts right there.
I'll get it. You're going to have an awful lot of explaining to do, I can tell you that.
Then you just let me worry about that. Take it off before I change my mind now.
What about all these women folks that cooked up victuals and brung over to you?
Yeah, that's going to be bad. Well, I'll just have to face the music, that's all.
Well, I know they're going... Huh?
I say, I've made my bed, now I may as well lay in it.
Uh-huh. Thought you said something else. Yeah, well, that's all right, sure. If you're going to get in bed, well, you can pull the cover up over your leg there to where they can't tell where you got these bandages on there or not. But you ought to go home before you take them off, old lum. Somebody's liable to see you.
Who said anything about going to bed?
Thought you said you was going to get in bed and listen to the radio.
Radio?
Well, where else you going to get any music this time of day?
I don't know what you're talking about.
Didn't you just say you was going home and get in bed and listen to the music?
I said I was going to have to face the music.
Well, if you're facing the radio, naturally you'll have to listen to it.
For goodness sakes, Abner, I ain't going to listen to no radio, and I ain't going home and go to bed.
Well, what's the use in making up your bed if you ain't going to use it?
I never made up no bed.
You said you did.
I never done no such a thing. I said I made up my bed, and now I've got to lay in it. But I ain't going to bed.
Well, how you going to lay in it if you don't go to bed? Oh, you mean just sort of get on top of the kiver there with all your clothes on, huh?
For goodness sakes.
Well, I believe it'd be good for you to go over and go to bed for a while, Mom. You're all nervous and upset. I believe a rest would be good for you. If you're just worrying about me running the stores, might not closing time anyway. Facts is, after I close up, I might even come over and listen to the radio with you.
I said I ain't gonna listen to no radio.
You know, after Lum and Abner went off the air, legions of fans collected the shows and scripts, about 1,500 of them, and formed a club known as the National Lum and Abner Society, which endured for many years. They really were a beloved part of the golden age of radio, so much so that the real town of Waters, Arkansas, that Lum and Abner modeled their made-up town of Pine Ridge after, actually changed its name to Pine Ridge about 5 years after they were on the air. This Wednesday night on Tune to Yesterday at 10 o'clock, we have an hour of science fiction for you, from broadcasts of X-1 with a Ray Bradbury story, then Dimension X.
Would you like to actually witness the burning of Rome, sail with Columbus in 1492 on his voyage of discovery to America, meet Cleopatra? Then why not take your vacation in time as well as in place?
Perhaps you've seen this leaflet before.
Of course not. Then you'll be interested in hearing the rest. Travel in Time Incorporated can costume you, put you in the crowd at any place and time in history.
Look,
we guarantee to teach you any language you need to move freely in any year without risk of detection.
At 11 o'clock Wednesday night, Crime from Crime Classics and the Top Secrets of the FBI show. This Thursday night, it's drama from the NBC University Theater, bringing us the story Star Quality. And at 11, Horror with Murder at Midnight and a broadcast of Suspense. That's this Wednesday and Thursday from 10 to midnight on Tune to Yesterday. This Friday, April 28th, is the birthday of one Joseph Dunninger. He was born in New York in 1892 and would become one of the most famous self-proclaimed mind readers or mentalists and a very popular showman through the theater circuit and on radio. According to him, he had a knack for prediction when he was young, from knowing who was at the door while they were knocking to knowing who was on the telephone when it was ringing. Between these little traits and his interest in magic, his parents encouraged him, and that led to his first performance at the age of 7 as Master Joseph Dunninger, child magician, at the Masonic Club in New York. By 16, he was a paid professional on the vaudeville circuit, performing in part a mind-reading and magic show. The act wasn't new by any means at that time, but his performances really wowed audiences with his mental tests. Bits like having an audience member write down a number, put it in an envelope, and he would guess it before it was open. He even had some long game material, like mental projection, where he would predict a newspaper headline in a distant city and then be right, or what's been referred to as injected thought. He would send a person miles away a thought who would reveal that once they were reached. These were some of the illusions that brought him the most notice, and he became one of the most in-demand magicians of his time. He played private parties for Thomas Edison and Theodore Roosevelt, and even became friends with Harry Houdini. And after Houdini died, members of his family believed him when he said he would communicate with them after his death through a seance, and there were concerted efforts to do this for about a decade after Houdini passed. And it was Joseph Dunninger himself who was actually part of a movement to debunk the idea of a seance or mediums who profited from the trade and offered a reward of $10,000 to anyone who could show him a real ghost and $10,000 to anyone that could prove he performed his magic and illusions with the help of any assistants. Even though at the height of his touring he had a staff of 50 working for him, the offer still stood and continued into his first radio show that NBC offered him in 1943. At this point, he was world famous, and his weekly show, on the air mostly in 1944, featured much of his road act, with the more visual sections put aside. Around 6 million listeners tuned in each week at its height, along with radio critics who generally panned the show. One saying that his act was just cheap tricks, no matter how many politicians, judges, or celebrities were astounded by them. Now, having a magician in the local theater once or twice a year would put him in the seats, as they say, but the weekly offering on the air only lasted about a year because of its repetitiveness, although it did have a brief return over one summer to replace the vacationing Amos and Andy program. Here's some sound of the Dunninger the Mentalist show from 1944.
Who among you is thinking of the name of Jimmy and a sum of money? Jimmy, where does that come from, please? The gentleman on the right side of the studio, about 32 or 34 rows. Would that happen to be your name, sir?
No.
Well, the amount of money, how do you associate that with Jimmy? Does he
partially
owe you that, or is that how much money he has in his possession, or what is the point, sir?
Horse race.
Horse race? You mean you're betting that much on Jimmy? Or is it that much that you won?
I'm betting that much.
You are. $30. Is that correct?
How much?
30.
Yes.
That's right. $30 on Jimmy. Someone in the audience is concentrating his or her mind upon the initials KC. Where does that come from, please? The question is, what are my initials and what address am I thinking about? KC. Catherine is the first name. The last name, Conlon or Conlon. Where does that come from, please? Won't you raise your hand up high? Right here in the center of the auditorium, fifth row. Is that your thought, young lady? Is that Catherine Conlon or Conlon?
I'm nervous.
You know what?
It's Coughlin.
Yes, that is right.
That's right.
Is that your own name?
That's my own name.
You said, where do I reside? Is that correct?
That's right.
You made no notation of the answer. Is that correct?
I meant to write it and I crossed it out.
Oh, you did?
Yes.
Well, are you thinking of 341 East 51st Street?
You're partly right.
Well, how much of that is wrong?
It's west.
I see, it's west. Oh!
Mr. Monroe, are you still just watching?
And weakening.
So far, so good. Well, now, Mrs. Rhoda, would you recommend Dunninger as a diplomat?
Well, that's an idea. If he could read the other diplomat's minds, he'd be valuable. And a little frightening.
Come on, Dunninger. How do you do it?
Mr. Monroe, it's training, that's all. I've always said that it could be done by any child 3 years of age after 30 years of practice.
I still don't understand. How do the thoughts come to you?
Well, they're simply impressions. They're pictures. They're mental impressions of letters, numbers, and so on that a person imagines or visualizes in bold white type before a background of black.
Is that so? Dunninger, I'll make a deal with you. If you receive impressions visually, you should be able to get anything, not just words.
Well,
right?
That's right, yes.
I think you're in for it this time. Before we went on the air, I told my fellow judges I would concentrate on a strain of music. Do you think you can get that?
Well, frankly, I know very little about music, but I will try. Now, if you will concentrate your mind, sir, upon the strain of music that you have selected from a probable million, and visualize that in picture form, as I described a few moments ago, I will try and write the, what do you call it, the score?
Just the notes.
The notes upon this sheet of paper here, and see if we can have it played for you and recognized by you. Now, is it so, sir, that you are the only man at this time familiar with the item you have in mind?
Yes.
Is it likewise true that I have not asked you to write or make any impression of this idea?
Perfectly right.
It has only been mentally impressed, and contrary to the explanation of so many skeptics, it has not been written upon paper. Is that correct, sir?
Very correct.
And you likewise pledge your word I have no way of getting this information to the best of your knowledge unless I can, as I claim, read your thought.
That's right.
For the benefit of my listening audience, as I am speaking to the gentleman, I am writing what I believe to be the mental impression of what he is thinking about upon a large sheet of paper. George Weiss, here it is. You please turn it over to our organist and see whether or not I am correct. I hope it's right.
That's exactly right. I don't know how you do it, but it's right.
This Friday night, April 28th at 10 o'clock on Tune to Yesterday, an hour of teenage sitcoms. It's episodes of A Date with Judy and Meet Corliss Archer. After that, Adventure at 11, as the Screen Director's Playhouse brings us the movie The Big Lift from 1951. This Saturday night, April 29th at 10 o'clock, it's an hour of variety from the Texaco Star Theater.
Hey, for crying out loud, fellas, we can't stand around here like this. We gotta do something. We may be trapped by this fire.
What fire?
Yes, what's on fire, Kenny?
I don't know, but I distinctly heard a man yell fire.
Oh, you're just hearing things, Kenny.
No, I'm not. Listen.
Fire.
See?
At 11 o'clock on Saturday night, it's Crime from I Was a Communist for the FBI, then a broadcast of Counter Spy, the case of the sweepstake murder from 1949. You can hear these shows this Friday, April 28th, and Saturday the 29th from 10 to midnight live on the air on Tune to Yesterday. Or you can listen where we stream it live at WRVO.org, right on the main page. You don't even have to search anywhere. And, you know, I hear a lot of different ways that people listen to old-time radio. They put it on the garage where they're tinkering around, or they'll listen to the stories as they're going to bed. As for me, I like to enjoy it while I'm doing things around the house, a little night cleaning. It actually helps me really get through it. So I'd like to hear from you this week about where you listen to old-time radio in the evening when Tune to Yesterday is on, or do you hear the encore broadcasts on our website and get other things done? I'm kind of curious, so send me an email and let me know. My address is mark@wrvo.org. That's M-A-R-K at wrvo.org. So I hope you enjoy the shows on Tune to Yesterday this week, and I'll be back with another TTY Dialer next week.